My name's Tamsin Westhorpe and welcome to Fresh from the Pod. I'm thrilled to welcome designer Jo Thompson to my podcast. Jo and I talk about the garden that she didn't get to create with DJ Zoe Ball at this year's Chelsea Flower Show. Ironically, the theme was so apt to the lockdown. We chat about having a successful career alongside being a mother, her new puppy, and her Colour My Garden offering that will allow us all to have a bit of Jo Thompson magic in our gardens, however small. Jo Thompson, I know we should be talking about gardening, but I've got to ask you about your new puppy first.
Complete madness. I had family have been badgering me for ages, for a long time, about having a new puppy. We've got Rush, who's a chocolate lab, who's 10, and he's such a lovely boy, and we're thinking, you know, he'd be a good example to a puppy. Anyway, finally I relented and I just saw this wonderful litter that had been born, and I knew the breeder, so it seemed like the perfect opportunity. You know, in lockdown I'm thinking, well, we're all going to be around, it'll be fine. And I realized, I mean, the puppy joined us the day before yesterday, and it's just like children. It's like, you know, babies, you forget the awfulness. I would say, Rush didn't chew, and everybody said, oh yes, he did, you've just forgotten it. Rush didn't do this, Rush didn't do that. Yeah, you know, and that everybody's reminding me that he did do all those things, but I've just blanked it out. And I'm sure, you know, that is like, it is like babies, isn't it? Newborn babies. So yes, I've had two nights on the kitchen floor with him, which I'm assured by breeders is the way to stop them crying, and he hasn't cried. You know, he's ended up kind of sleeping on my head, going into Rush's bed, much to Rush's horror. Rush just looks the whole time, he's just got this help me face on him, while this little puppy is trying to sort of, you know, hang off him. And he's a little yellow lab. He's called Basil, and he's very, very, very sweet, but he's a puppy, so chewing everything, particularly fond of the achillea that's just about to flower in the garden, I've noticed. That is a great one for nibbling the tops off. It must just be, you know, just crunchy enough, satisfyingly crunchy. So they're having a very late Chelsea chop, I think.
Yeah, what dramas you have ahead of you. But I've loved, during the lockdown, you were doing a morning walk at 8 o'clock. Was it 8 o'clock in the morning on it?
Yes, yes, that's right. And I'm resurrecting that. I had to take a couple of weeks off. You know, it's one of those things, life, work, then the puppy. But we're back. I'm probably going to do it 3 days a week now, as work is starting again, really, probably with a vengeance. So, but I still want to do it because it's kind of providing me really with really good company. And on, you know, on those walks in the morning, there are these conversations that happen. I feel like, I mean, I must look like a lunatic, you know, traipsing through the fields, talking to my camera the whole time. But I keep telling myself, people probably think I'm just, you know, on a phone call. But what is lovely is seeing the, you know, having this conversation, but also seeing the conversations with other people, and also kind of discovering things at the same time. Because, you know, I'm not, I always say, in the interests of transparency and clarity, I'm not, of course, I love my garden, I love plants, but birds, for example, I knew very little about birds. I probably could spot a robin and spot a blackbird, not even recognise their song. And it was one of those things in lockdown. It wasn't that I made myself a list and said, right, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. Well, I did make that list and I didn't do any of those things on it. But one of the things that did come out of it kind of naturally was this interest in, you know, waking up really early because of all sorts of reasons, kind of worry, I suppose, just kind of weird insomnia, hearing this amazing dawn chorus, and then continuing that conversation and my questions about it while I was on the dog walk. And, you know, we've covered Dawn Chorus, with, you know, constellations, wildflowers, just everything, the natural world in general, finding, discovering all sorts of wonderful books, fabulous writing, and also watching Chris Packham. So Chris Packham was also doing a 9 o'clock kind of live feed. I say he was also doing, I mean, obviously he had millions of viewers every morning. And I would catch up on that after my walk and then talk about that the next day, because it was just wonderful. Again, it felt really special in this kind of, in this sort of weird, you know, time where you, where you're not allowed to do so many things, that actually there's this whole world of stuff that you are allowed to do. It's just giving yourself the kind of license to do it.
Exactly. So where is your home? Are you quite rural? So whereabouts are you?
I'm in Sussex, and I am rural. The village is rural, but I live in the middle of the village, which is perfect. Now, I moved from London, I suppose, 20 years ago, and I think I really wanted my children to have this kind of famous five childhood and everything, and neither of them, it turned out, were particularly interested in that. So I lived out in the middle of nowhere to begin with when I moved, and I really didn't like that. I think the idyll, the dream is probably better than the reality for me, because I need to be able to, you know, have a shop where I can go and buy a paper, have a pub. Not that I'm going to go to the pub every day, but it's just that kind of knowing it's there. And even, you know, at this time, when during lockdown, when everything's been shut, all the shops, there are only five or six shops in the village, but they've all been shut, apart from the village shop, which sells the food and everything. I've realised it's just the idea of a few people around that I like and I very much need. So I've been living in this house for I suppose, six, seven years, and it's perfect. I love it. And I have been so grateful to have been living here, you know, during lockdown, because just having that outside space, having access to a walk that I could legitimately go on without getting into a car. I've been very lucky.
But your gardening career, your design career started because you worked on your roof garden, didn't you, in London? Was that the sort of thing that lighted the fire?
Yes, absolutely. So I had when I announced I was 20 years ago I was going to study garden design to my family, there was much hilarity, because it was one of the stories, you know, everybody has a story, and one of the stories that my parents used to love to tell, well, in fact they relish telling even more so now that I am a garden designer, was when I was entrusted at the age of 16, they went off to the States for 2 weeks, and I was entrusted with the house plants and the garden plants. And I had very clear instructions, I was told, to water the pots on the terrace once a day and the pots in the house once a week. And I was, yes, in that sort of teenage way, thinking about something else, boys probably, or music or something. Anyway, and then they flew off, and I sat there, and this is in the days before mobile phones, emails. And I sat there and I thought, now, pots once a day or pots once a week? And then, terrace pots, you know, which way round was that? And I kind of figured to myself that houseplants were like humans, and therefore, because they lived in a house, and therefore they needed water every day. I mean, this is how bad it was. And so I gaily watered the houseplants once a day and the terrace plants once a week in a heat wave. And my parents came back and everything was dead, inside and out.
That just shows, though, that at the age of 16, you weren't interested. So it's never too late, is it?
No, I absolutely loved space and architecture, the arrangement of space. My father's Italian. I spent a lot of time in Italy as a child. And I was a kind of, and again, I wouldn't say, you know, but I was that other 7 or 8 year olds would be badgering their parents to go and get an ice cream or a pizza. But I would be, I'd be saying, oh, can we go to the Villa d'Este and have a look at that? But, you know, I was fascinated by this garden just outside Rome, you know, Tivoli, where I was just amazed at how, even at a really young age, how this garden of 100 fountains had been created by a Renaissance architect in the days before electricity. And I still, you know, I didn't understand how it worked, but I was just intrigued by the space. And the same with, there's a wonderful, fake perspective pergola by Borromini in the Palazzo Farnese, I think it is. And again, I loved how this, you know, it's only a 9 meter space, but it looks like it's 30 meters and all of those things I used to really love. And I suppose it was that what when I first had my roof terrace in London. Now it wasn't a roof terrace; it was a flat terrace. And I am going somewhere with this, but I am so it was just a flat sort of space on top of the roof, but it was safe. And I was lucky enough to live really near Clifton Nurseries, so I went over there. It was a tiny, tiny flat, so I just wanted to make use of all the space we had, and went over to Clifton Nurseries and said, "Can you help me?" And this chap came over, and he came over with it, came upstairs, and sort of stood there with a notebook making sketches, and I said, what are you doing? You know, what? I'm just thinking, oh, he was going to build something. And he said, oh, I'm a garden designer. And I thought, oh, and that was a sort of little bit of a light bulb moment. Oh, okay. And then I watched him transform this space, this flat, whatever it was, maybe 5 meters by 6 meters, something like that, into, so, a, you know, a 30 meter square space into actually cubic meters. And I can't do that, but suddenly there was a layout, and there was all the space above this flat space that suddenly was being used. And it was a usable extra room, you know, literally. And and it was all of that, and I started kind of putting two and two together and thinking, I understand, you know, this is what I like doing. I've enjoyed watching, and I really want to see if I can do that myself, to transform a space into something that can be usable, that is useful and usable, and looks nice where it is. And it was as simple as that. So I had to, the children were really tiny then. I'm trying to remember. Yes, I think my daughter had only just been born. So I literally, you know, I took myself off to the English gardening school, arranged childcare, you know, got a nanny twice a week. And that, you know, we weren't rolling it, you know, we didn't have a lot of money.
That was so quite a commitment, wasn't it?
It really was, you know, when we didn't have that money to do that. So I did that, announced to my family that I was taking a year-long course, so 2 days a week plus 3 days at home in garden design, you know, cue everybody to fall about laughing. And that made me determined, even more so, that I was going to, you know, I was going to make this. I was just mad.
What did they think then when you said, I'm doing Chelsea Flower Show? I mean,
again, there was a lot of kind of rolling of eyes and kind of, what is she doing now? Because I do, I don't know if impulsive is, but it probably is. I'm just thinking about my puppy. I am, when I'm pretty sure that I want to do something and also I really want to make it happen, I'm a firm believer in kind of committing to it, announcing it, and then it will happen. You know, things take on a kind of an energy of their own, I suppose. So I said, yeah, I'm going to do that. I thought, I'd like to do Chelsea. I would, you know, I'll just do a small garden, but it would be really lovely to do that. Have a go. Why not? I'd be in this wonderful setting where, you know, all these other people who are doing the same thing as me are going to be for 3 to 4 weeks. How amazing would that be? But then I kind of didn't think I'd be accepted. So I applied. And it was accepted.
What year was that, Jo?
That was 2009. So actually, probably accepted because it was during the recession. And there wasn't, no. So what happened was I contacted De Melza Children's Hospice, which is quite near me, and talked to them about whether they would consider doing a Chelsea Show garden, because I had this little idea about a sort of a music therapy garden, I suppose. And I always say to people who say to me, how do you go about getting sponsors? I just say, my advice is, you know, you send out those emails, you send out that letter, and you've got to hope that one of them lands on the desk of somebody who's thought, oh, I would like to do Chelsea. I don't know how I do it. Cause that's always so much easier than starting from scratch and trying to persuade a sponsor that it's a jolly good idea. You know, if somebody's, you know, watched Chelsea, enjoys it, enjoys gardening, but just thought, oh, you know, how would we even start? And then they get that letter saying, would you like me to, you know, do this for you? Then that's really great. And that's what I was lucky. That's what happened to me. And they then had, a sponsor who funded that small garden. And it was a courtyard garden. I'm not roundabout, probably it was 4x5. So not much smaller than my roof terrace. So yes, so it was accepted. And as I say, then you're in it. Then you certainly can't drop out. You know, you have to make it happen. So I just kind of figured it was a very simple design, and it was rebuilt after the show at the hospice. And I just wanted to make a garden that people could use, an idea. So a garden that people could use, a garden that would give ideas to people who didn't necessarily want a kind of a music therapy garden, you know, so there'd be nice plant, you know, ideas for planting. And just to spend a really simple, and it was a really simple space. It was a kind of, you know, slightly curved bench. There seemed to be benches in most of the gardens that I do at the shows, because I like giving people the opportunity to sit down.
Oh, yeah, but that's so important, though. Yeah. I mean, I know with my garden at Stocktonbury, people say, "Oh, you haven't got enough seats." We've actually got about 25.
Really?
Unique. That's so important, isn't it? That people want to sit and take the garden in, and they can also imagine themselves in your space, can't they? I can see myself sitting there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think in my own garden, I'm just starting to incorporate seats, because, you know, there's that thing of the gardener themselves and other things. There's time, you know, you haven't got time to sit down. But I was thinking, I've this morning, or yeah, whenever I've lost track of time, new puppy, no sleep. A couple of days ago, I realized I just had this sort of old rattan chair or whatever. And I've got a sort of little like covered lodge outside my front door that, I mean, I'm sort of tucked away. So it's not that the front door looks out onto anything. I thought, actually, if I put that chair there, that means I can sit outside with my cup of tea in the morning, and I can still be, you know, that's the one time when I might be sitting down. And, it kind of, but that took, I mean, I've lived in this house for years, and that took ages to dawn on me that actually, you know, again, to allow myself to sit somewhere and just do that sort of practical thing that in clients' gardens I'm doing all the time. You know, I'm looking for places to sit, and, you know, places to allow them to sit. And again, they might say the same as, you know, we just said that you never have time to sit in your own garden. But I say to them, but you've got friends who'll want to sit down, and it's just nice to have that destination anyway.
But your garden that didn't happen this year for Chelsea 2020, gosh, wouldn't it have been appropriate? It was so appropriate. It's really quite strange. You know, RHS and NHS together, a friendship garden about front gardens. It's almost like you had a window into what was going to be so valuable.
It was really strange. And I remember first having the conversation with the RHS. It was round last May, or in fact, it was at Chelsea, and we were figuring out what to do. And I was, and also we knew it would be linked with the NHS. And I'd designed a communal garden for the Chelsea Barracks show for Chelsea in 2016, and I really enjoyed, you know, sort of again, urban spaces, communal spaces, they mean a lot to me. And I was kind of thinking, how can we share this? How can we share open space as much as possible? How can we share the idea of spaces being really good for people? And I was thinking, well, you know, communal gardens. And then I was thinking, well, people don't have, you know, there isn't enough necessarily, there aren't enough of those available spaces in the city necessarily, but everybody's got a front. They haven't necessarily got a front garden, but they've got a facade of a flat or a house. They'll have a window, you know, they'll have a window. So the chances are there'll be a ledge to put a window box on. There'll be possibly a front door, might be a shared front door, but there'll be a, you know, there's space for a pot to go outside. And then I was looking at front gardens, and I you know, going back to what I was talking about Italy and having spent a lot of time in Italy. And I think, you know, those piazzas in small towns, in big cities, they're all incredibly important. They're not necessarily green, but they're spaces for people to come to, because a lot of, you know, houses in the cities, same in France, really, they tend not to have gardens. Whereas in London, probably they're more, probably more gardens. I don't know, but I'm thinking there are more gardens in London than you know other cities necessarily have. Anyway, so all of these things combined, and I was also thinking about the fronts of you know, when you see in France or if you go down the side street and you see these houses festooned with pelargoniums and you're thinking, how, you know, why does somebody do that? Because they can't necessarily see that from their own house. And obviously it must give them pleasure when they walk into the house. But actually, you know, what that's for other people. And that is, you know, they're giving pleasure to other people. So all of these little threads came together. And I thought, actually, let's look at these front garden spaces and how instead of having hedges, which, you know, which we all, you know, which a lot of us tend to put in our front gardens to give privacy, you're never really going to make a front garden on a street private. So why not celebrate it instead and make the most of that space? And there were a couple of little, or a few little inspirations. One of them was just walking down the beginning of Portobello Road, and it was a sunny morning, and a couple were just sitting there having a cup of tea in literally a space that must have been 2 meters by 1.5 meters. It was tiny, but they had a little bistro table in there, two little chairs, and they were having a cup of tea outside one of those lovely brightly coloured little terraced houses. Completely oblivious, you know, all the world could see them as they were walking past. Some people were taking photos because it was such a nice sight. They were completely oblivious doing their thing. And I thought that that's really lovely. And yet, you know, they're still in contact with, you know, it started to make me think, well, what, yeah, they, you know, they must just like that, just seeing humanity walking by. There was that. There was also the Garden District in New Orleans. I don't know, you know, if anybody ever gets the chance to go to the Garden District in New Orleans, it is extraordinary. All these front garden spaces, most of the houses are very long and thin and tend not to have back gardens, backyards. Their outside space is at the front. And so everybody can see everybody else's front gardens. And so there's an enormous pride that's taken in these front gardens that are totally usable. I saw one that had, you know, there are lots of porches there because it gets very hot. So there's a lot of outside living. One that had a kind of adult swing and a child swing next to it on this porch. Pots that spill out from the inside the garden to the outside onto the pavement. Little benches put on the pavement, put on the kind of the bit of pavement outside the garden, inviting people to sit down, little public sharing libraries, like little kind of boxes that have been beautifully painted with sort of book swap things, little dog treat dispensers and little kind of poo bag dispensers as well at the same time, you know. So all of these things that actually made to make people's lives easier, but not, you know, not the house owner's life easier, to make other people's lives better in a small way.
What's been happening, isn't it? I mean, I live in rural Herefordshire, and it's a beautiful place to live. But when everyone was outside clapping for the NHS, and you see people putting pictures of their front gardens or sitting, I felt quite, oh, I'm missing out. I really did feel like everyone was together, united, and front gardens are so important, you know, environmentally.
Oh, they really are. And having that, you know, I think, I know there have been campaigns before about, you know, not paving over your front garden, not giving it over to a car if you can possibly help it. I mean, I understand people need spaces to park their car, but even if you can combine the, you know, the two, the parking and garden space almost. And I'm, yeah, as I said, there have been campaigns, and it seems to be now that people are, it seems to have registered, particularly during this time, maybe it has been this, it's been the whole lockdown thing and the using the front gardens, that people see they have been using their front gardens. They're a viable, useful space. And actually, if they do need to park a car, can they combine the two? So I've had, you know, we've done a couple of designs recently where there have been, it's kind of gravel parking and gravel garden combined, so actually changing a paved driveway area into that. So make it actually returning it back to the garden, which has been really nice. So make the messages. Yeah, the message is sinking in, but I know what you mean. It's the same. I am in the middle of the village, so I could hear, you know, these pots and pans being kind of, you know, banged and people clapping, and it was extraordinary because I couldn't necessarily see it, as I say, because I don't have that front garden really, because I'm tucked away. But just hearing it and hearing people outside was amazing.
But you were collaborating with Zoe Ball, the DJ. So yeah. How did that relationship occur? Come to you, or were you put together?
We were put together. So she was... you know, she's a keen gardener, and was keen to do something. So the RHS kindly introduced it, set this up, and what was lovely was that, yes, it was a great Zoe was having proper input into the garden, and was, you know, sadly was really, you know, couldn't come and plant as she'd really hoped to do. And but what's been lovely from that is, again, from, you know, the friendship garden, a proper friendship has kind of come out of that, which is really lovely. So earlier on, when we weren't, you know, nobody should have been going into people's gardens or anything like that. We did a little sort of, I left something on a little, some kind of lettuce, little salad plants on her doorstep. She left me a little broad bean plant. We sort of did a swap, and that's been lovely. And it was lovely. I was part of her radio show did a morning kind of homeschool session every morning, you know, sort of around 7:45 or whatever. They'd have somebody on, and they had, they had amazing people. They had David Tennant, and then they had me. So from the sublime to the ridiculous, I did feel like, oh, that's an act to follow. But just, every morning somebody would set a homeschool challenge, and so mine was a very simple one, just growing a sunflower, linking in with the Landscape Institute, you know, just growing a sunflower. Because although for us, you know, and possibly most people who are listening to this, you know, pretty much know how to grow a sunflower, but there are a lot of people who did, you know, who didn't know, who don't know. And so it's just that sort of really, look, you can, you get it, you know, get a packet of seeds, share them with 20 people, plant one or two, you know, plant two, just for safety's sake, and you will, yeah, you'll. So that was
speaking of David Tennant, am I right in thinking that you were a drama teacher?
yeah, not for very long. I read modern languages at university, and then after that went to do some research in Italian theatre, very, very obscure cinema, Italian cinema and theatre, and then decided, again, this was another one where my family went, okay, so you're going to go from a PhD to train as a primary school teacher, which is what I announced one day. so now there's that background, so you see why they were used to me sort of announcing things. But I suddenly thought, oh, I just quite like to do that. And so I ended up, yes, I was teaching in London, and I taught for 4 years. So, you know, a tiny amount of time in comparison to what I've been doing now. But and I ended up teaching, being head of drama. Again, apart from, as I said, having spent years researching Italian theatre and the works of Pirandello, I didn't really have much experience in drama teaching, but it was one of those things. I thought I could do it, and actually we did really well. You know, we did really well. I trained, you know, and as I said, I did my PGCE, and it was fun. It was wonderful. And what is lovely now is being in touch with a couple of my ex pupils. You know, I look at one who's a successful actor now, and she, you know, and I just laugh about, no, but looking back on it, and one who is a published novelist, and I think, oh my God, you know, it's funny that we can have those conversations. I think the age they are now was the age I was when I was teaching them. And I just think, I was such a baby, you know, how could somebody have left me in control of a class of 20 girls? And I sort of marched them off to, we went off, I took them off to France. I took them off to, part in that. I took them off to Mapperton, you know, the gardeners at Mapperton. And I took them there because I decided that that was, again, having, and I hadn't really thought about that until this very minute. It was the architecture and the layout of the gardens that I absolutely loved. And I don't think, I might be right in saying that the gardens then weren't, they were only open by appointment. I think this was a long time ago. So I think they were sort of anyway, they were having a revamp, but I just made a few phone calls and took the girls over there. Yeah. Anyway, so I am rambling, but that's what
you obviously inspired them in some way. I think that is so fantastic. But we're not going to see you treading the boards then.
No. Directing is fine. Telling people what to do is fine. And maybe that's, but actually doing it myself is a whole other thing. And maybe that's a bit like the, you know, with the, I'm just thinking about these show gardens, although I do plant them, but as you know, with the gardens at Chelsea, they cannot be done without an amazing team. And you've got the landscape contractors who work miracles in 19 days. And so I'll be, maybe I'm directing there, doing quite a lot of the old pointing, you know, that classic thing, but then actually getting hands dirty, putting my money where my mouth is when the planting happens.
But I have this, you know, we haven't really spoken in person. I've seen you in the distance. I know of you. We might have chatted on the phone. But when I see you at Chelsea, you're always the designer that's always smiling. And I just don't know how you do it. I think, is that an act? I mean, honestly, how, you know, that's, it's tough, isn't it, on press day? You must be exhausted, but yeah. You've always got this wonderful glow and smile. And
I think by that, especially on press day, because you're, I think it's sheer relief that you've got this thing built when 3 days before you were wondering how on earth it was going to happen. But no, it's the whole thing is a pleasure. I might not necessarily say that where we're having some sort of disaster or the rain is pouring down or we're behind schedule, but I kind of, without sounding too ridiculous, I do think, you know, the kind of the atmosphere, the garden absorbs the atmosphere it was built in, the atmosphere it's born into. And, you know, that doesn't mean to say I'm going around saying to everybody, come on, let's be happy. But I'm really lucky to have amazing contractors that I work with, to have a planting team that have supported me. I mean, it's grown through volunteers and now Nina Baxter, who is a garden designer. In fact, most of them are garden designers who, you know, have their own businesses to run, and over the years have volunteered to give up at least a week of their time and work all the hours possible to create this garden. And so, you know, it's got to be fun. It's a bit like, you know, I'm not saying we're all sort of our office isn't open at the moment, but you know, I'm not saying we're all laughing and jollily, you know, sort of making jokes all day in the office, but the atmosphere, you know, I kind of think I would like people who are working with me and for me to work in the atmosphere that I would like to work in. And I've been on the receiving end of really bossy bosses and you know, people's telling you it's got to be done in a certain way, or it's got to be quiet, and it's got to be this, and it's got to be that, and it's all very serious. And I think, you know, I, whilst things, of course, have got to be taken seriously, that doesn't mean that it's got to be stern and unenjoyable, you know, the atmosphere. So all of that, you know, and combined with especially, as I say, that planting week where we all come together, 7 or 8 girls, 10 to be girls from all over the UK, from Japan. Yuko comes from Japan. Katrina comes from New Zealand, and all getting together. And we probably don't see each other, apart from Nina, who now works with me. We don't see each other apart from that one time a year. So it's a wonderful, and we all live together that week. So it's a great kind of, we've sorted out relationships.
It's in the city.
Yeah, it really is. It just, everything gets sorted out in that way. It's a laundry for the mind and the soul. And it's wonderful, all through really hard work. And then, yeah, on the press day, it's just this kind of, I'm so proud for everybody who's been involved, that they've created something that other people are looking at saying, I like that. You know, it's just it's really nice.
Well, it's theatre, isn't it?
Yeah. Drama.
comes back to drama again.
It is. It's creating the creating an atmosphere, because that's what I do think with these gardens as well, is they're not just a picture. For me, I need to, I might sound slightly bananas, but I have to imagine the client who is inhabiting that garden, the person who's inhabiting that fake garden, I suppose, you know.
What you do every day, you have an office, you have a design studio, you have a team. So in the real world, you are creating gardens for all sorts of different people, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, a complete range of people in a complete range of places. And interestingly, I find that a lot of, you know, there's a, I don't know, percentage wise, but there is a big bulk. The bulk of the clients who are in the creative industries themselves, whether they are, and at the moment there are actors, producers, writers, ballet dancers, musicians, and it's really interesting. And I don't know whether, you know, I don't know whether that every, you know, maybe every design practice would say the same thing. I don't know, but I just think it's lovely because we can have that conversation. I was talking to a musician the other day, and I said to him, I don't know what your garden's going to look like, but I can tell you the feeling it's going to have. And he was saying, yeah, I get that completely. And so it's that sort of, there's a lot of sort of hand waving going on and sort of, but I suppose it's that maybe in, you know, in that creative process, you always start off with the, you know, they start off with the same sort of idea. They've kind of got a concept. Maybe it's like writing a book. I don't know, that you kind of know what you're going to do, but you've no idea how you're going to get there.
You also restore gardens, don't you? You've been working on restoration projects. Tell me about those. That's been.
Yes. So we have got, we've been lucky enough to be working on a Repton landscape in Essex, which is ongoing. And that, again, you know, imagine, you know, I was just, I can't touch it. I can't touch it. But luckily, I know, because look, he did it perfectly. Don't need to do anything else. But what was wonderful was that one whole side, so the southern and the west, the southern and the western aspects had been tackled by him, I suppose. But the north and the east hadn't. So that was wonderful. So they were kind of blank canvases. And so what we're doing, so as well as restoring some of the, you know, looking, sadly, there was no red book for, there was only one drawing remaining of this place, but kind of restoring and hoping to restore, you know, we found old maps that say, for example, Sundial Garden. And so you think, okay, well, what can we do that makes a nod to that? I'm not going to do a sort of a pastiche of a Sundial Garden, but, you know, how can we, as I said, acknowledge that? But then also designing the rest of the garden, not so that it looks like a Repton landscape, and not so that it's a pastiche. You know, I need to avoid the pastiches, and I need to avoid the kind of, you know, again, being, you know, that heavy stamp. And I often say this, it's that, you know, avoiding the heavy stamp of design. I don't want it to look like it's been designed, and I certainly don't want it to look like it's been designed by Joe Thompson.
But that's my worst nightmare.
I would say, I was trying to think last night, you know, right, how would I describe your gardens? And I thought, they do have fairy dust on them. All your planting is very light, and I don't know, it just feels like it's alive. I know that sounds ridiculous, but you've got this magical touch with planting.
Oh, gosh.
But I think it's feminine, beautiful, and just, yeah, floaty and romantic. Even in your modern gardens, it has that sort of dreamy look. That's what I would say.
I think, oh gosh, that's lovely, Tamsin. That's really lovely to hear. I'm just pondering on that and thinking, well, obviously so having come from not knowing anything about plants at all, I did, when I trained, I immersed myself completely and utterly in plants, starting off with the David Austin catalogue, Peter Beale's Roses, classic Roses book, and the Woodens of Wenhaston catalogue. And those were my Bibles. I used to go to bed with them. And I love these, and all very, and then followed swiftly by Christopher Lloyd, Well-Tempered Garden. And that, so all of these were written. What those all have in common is how they're written. They are, you know, they're interesting. They're funny. I think they're the kind of the cookery equivalent would be maybe, I don't know, Nigella's How to Eat, you know, the first time, one of the first times recently when a cookery book was also, you know, interesting and you felt there was a character, a personality in it. And so I started planting in my own gardens were, and I moved house quite a lot. So I had small, you know, I didn't have big gardens, but I was planting. And I really like, and in fact, the first, going back to the first garden I did at Chelsea, that Demelza garden, I wanted to kind of show that. Now, I called it a perennial meadow, and it's not a perennial red meadow, but that was just my term for it, I suppose. But that idea of, so something that's sustainable, something that will actually work, because I don't want to do for anybody, and certainly not in a show garden, certainly not for a client, is create something that looks beautiful when you leave it. And then is terrible, you know, and then doesn't work. Yeah. So, and I figured out a way that you could have this kind of, you know, succession. I mean, everybody does it, you know, succession of plants, but also interweaving them so that they, so that you can look after them without, you know, wanting to just, you know, pull the whole lot out. So that was the sort of practical side, but that kind of came after the thinking of it, which is again, oh, am I going to sound silly again? You know, this sort of wanting to create it's the atmosphere. It's all about the atmosphere. So I'm looking and I'm thinking if a client says to me, I want this sort of looking loose and relaxed. And actually most clients who come to me do want their gardens looking, their planting looking like that, because that's what I'm known for. So, you know, it's a quid pro quo, but I'm thinking, you know, there might be one client, for example, who's incredibly feminine, but she's not girly, you know, she doesn't want lots of sort of pink, fluffy, blousy stuff. No. So it became her garden is much more, there are, for example, pink persicarias and sanguisorbas, which suit her better than the Olivia Rose, say, or something like that. So I am really looking. I mean, I'm aware that I might be sounding completely stark raving bonkers here, but it's how I was. So I'm thinking, how do these plants, but how do they fit with the client, with the house again? And this, you know, a pink rose might look ridiculous in front of this massive Edwardian kind of red brick house. You know, I need something that's airier, almost, you know, sort of lighter. Anyway, so all of those things are in play at the same time. And then I'm looking at, you know, I completely ignore the, you know, tall at the back, medium height plants in the middle and low at the front. And I turn it round and, well, I probably don't have low at the back, but I'll have a lot of tall kind of transparent plants at the, not all through the front, but just creating again a sort of just making it a little bit more dreamy,
relaxed.
Yeah. Natural, yes.
And this leads us on brilliantly to your most fantastic idea. I just love this. And this is a recent idea of yours, which is Colour My Garden. And I just love it. So I'll explain briefly, but basically people can sort of buy a package off you. So you get to know them through a survey or set of questions, am I right? And yeah. Then they buy bulbs in March, or you send them bulbs in March, May, September and November that suit their personality, their garden. So yeah. This is really you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really me. I mean, how bananas, you know, with new puppy at the office. I thought, oh, I'll do that as well. So it kind of, this is one of the things that was born of Instagram. So I love Instagram. I try to use it every day. I love the conversations you can have. I love the inspiration that you get from it. I love the fact that you can talk to people you never dreamt of talking to and all of those things. And over the last year, and especially it was probably last tulip time, So 2019, kind of March, April, May. And people now posting pictures of tulips and combinations I'd planted in various gardens. And people would be coming to me and saying, it's a bit like they did with the roses. I did a kind of rose advent calendar, but I'll explain that in a minute. And so people would be saying on messages, oh, I really like that, you know, that tulip, what is it? Or do you think I could put this with that? And I'd be saying, well, actually, why don't you try it with this or with this allium or and so on? And these forget, and I realized these, I was having these conversations every day. So I started
thinking about this idea of a subscription service where I could deliver those bulbs at the right time of year so then they're not getting moldy in people's garages. I could choose the bulbs from a kind of tried and trusted group of bulbs that I work with that I know will work, but each creating a different atmosphere. And I thought, well, that gives an opportunity to people who can't necessarily afford a garden design or for their garden to be designed and landscaped, but they can have a little bit of, they can have some colour, they can have a bit of the garden design through that. And one of my really lovely clients said, oh, and again, we'll laugh when, you know, I'm saying this really sort of tongue in cheek, but she said, this is, it's like, you know, the Christian Dior Couture range and people not being able to have that, but the perfume was something that everybody could have. And
yes.
I went, okay, I said, I'll take that as an analogy. That's really good.
Really reasonably priced. And I was thinking, what a fabulous wedding present, you know, to give a young couple a year's subscription, new home, bulbs, and you don't even need soil to plant in. It can all be pots. Oh, I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it is that, you know, as you say, so I offer like a little kind of courtyard selection, and they're all going to be different. And the reason there are no, I mean, there are generic pictures of mine, of things that I've done before, but all these got you very much, you fill in a quiz. And I got the idea from, and I saw it, it was a trouser company that my son uses. They sell trousers, but you kind of fill in this kind of quite fun quiz which says, you know, do you like, you know, how do you like wearing your trousers, and do you like this, do you like this or other, and then they send you a package and then you get, and I was like, that just really, that's taken all the bother out of it. So there are there was all of those things going on, and it was formulating, and of course then we launched it in the middle of lockdown. It's gone bananas. So
well, I think it's great. I just find you, you know, a bundle of energy, and how I've got one son who's a teenager now, how you've achieved all this with two children. I mean, I just don't know how you've done it. What, I mean, there must be women out there listening to us thinking, oh, if only, you know, but I've got children. And it is, it's restricting. We have to look after our kids. How have you managed to do all this?
Well, I mean, one of the things, when I moved from London to the countryside, I did, I kind of thought, you know, again, I thought I was also going to be this sort of 50s housewife and you know, I'd be at home every day raising my children, and you know, with all the sort of other little plans I had going on in my mind. And a great friend of mine said, just before I moved, said to me, Joe, you do realize this means you're going to have to go to coffee mornings, don't you? And I said, don't be ridiculous, I'll be fine, and I'll love a coffee morning. And I went to my first coffee morning and vowed I'd never go again. But I'm sure, you know, lots of people might, but for me, the talk of you know, the discussions of the competitive mothering and
terrifying.
You know, yeah,
milestones. I remember when I went to one when I had my son, a sort of mum's coffee morning, and these mums were talking about what scented flip-top bin liner they used, and I just thought, no, I've got to get out of here, it's not for me.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly that. I went to one where they'd all brought along samples of the granite that they were having for their work surfaces, and I'm thinking, what? So I do. I'm with you, Tamsin, on that. So I could not get away quick enough from that. I thought, I'm just not. And what is it? I suppose my So part of that is just my, you know, I need to do something. And my children say they have, okay, they've suffered from that kind of classic thing of me forgetting to fill in forms and, you know, and getting, and I, you know, buying cakes for the homemade cake sale and, you know, distressing them at home and sending them in, and that's normal. but I do, well, hopefully I'm a better mother for it. Hopefully it's a good example to both, you know, son and daughter, sort of work, you know, the working mother and all of that. But the other thing was, I read a book by, I don't expect you to have heard of this wonderful woman called Dame Stephanie Shirley. And actually she's known as Dame Steve Shirley. Right. She's an IT pioneer, but years ago, kind of started off in the 60s, changed her name to her working name to Steve so that people would take her seriously in communication. She wasn't allowed, she had to stop working when she married her husband, and they were both worked in the same IT, early IT, when I say IT, it's kind of programming. She had to stop working there because she got married. And so she set up this kind of, and it was a kitchen table business of, you know, sort of cottage industry, I suppose, but of programmers, mainly women. In fact, all women until until she was told that was illegal. You know, the whole discrimination thing later on. But and she was a firm believer in, again, everybody doing what they were best at, but also actually completely appropriate for now. So if people needed to work from home, that's fine. If the woman you're employing needs to come in at 10 because she needs to drop off her child at the doctor's but works till 6 or says she'll make up the hours, or you know she's made up the hours at home, then that's fine. And as long as people do their job that they're being paid for, it doesn't matter when they're doing it. And I think so many employers over the years have been kind of like, ooh, about home working, but I've been very much, you know, big proponent of that. So anybody who works with me will tell you, if they need to work from home, that's fine, it doesn't matter, as long as the job.
I think that is what's going to change, isn't it?
Yeah,
people will have to work from home. And I always find, if you're a working mum, you have such a strong work ethic, because you know you've got to be somewhere else later, you've got to get the job done.
Absolutely. And I had some, it's quite interesting actually talking to some friends the other, because my son is still in Spain. He's been in Spain through lockdown, but my daughter, who's in her first year at university, has been at home. And I was having a kind of a Zoom with friends, and they were talking about how much more cleaning they were having to do. And I said, well, why not get your children, you know, you're cleaning up after people who would be cleaning up after themselves, or not, as the case may be, you know, their teenager. But, you know, get them, they've got to do it. You know, they've got to make the rule. I mean, I sound a bit of a kind, you know, it doesn't sound very fun in my house, does it? But at lunchtime, everybody gets their own lunch, because I'm not going to start doing that, because they're grown-ups, and I'm busy. So they can all do it, and that's fine. And then that's accepted. I do. Having said that, I have been the one that's been, both nights with the puppies so far. So I don't, I've taken on a lot of that. But
Well, you're a complete inspiration. I can't believe we've been talking for nearly an hour. You are so fascinating.
Oh, gosh.
Bundle of energy. And, you know, I just know that you're going to do so much more. You're going to, you know, fly high and surprise us with wonderful gardens.
Yes, it's that kind of feeling of, but that's what's amazing about this job, about this industry, I suppose, that you know, there's so much more, and you don't know what's on your doorstep. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what the next project's going to be. It's all, you don't know what the next show gardens you're going to see, how the shows are going to be, all of that. It's all, well, again, very much now things are changing, but it's so exciting. It's so exciting.
Oh, well, I look forward to maybe seeing your puppy on one of your morning Instagrams.
Yes, he's going to appear. He's going to appear.
The star of the show. Well, thank you so much, Jo, for joining me on Fresh from the Pod. And I hope to see you in person very soon.
Yes, you too, Tamsin. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm convinced that Jo will continue to shock and surprise her family with her wonderful ideas. I'm going to be thinking of her as she copes with a new puppy in her garden, and I hope he doesn't cause too much disruption to the roses. Anyway, until next time, happy gardening!
Fresh from the Pod is presented by me, Tamsin Westhorpe, and produced by Candide in their plant-filled Bristol office. Candide is a free plant and gardening app with a helpful community of plant lovers, interesting articles and great tools like plant identification and garden tours. Ask a question in the app with the hashtag #FreshFromThePod and I'll choose my favourite to answer later in the series. And if you enjoyed Fresh From The Pod, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts, share it on Reddit and talk about it with your friends. And don't forget to subscribe.